So thank you. So as Rose said, I'm Cindy Curl, and Aaron and I both work with Joel Kaufman at the University of Washington, and we'll both be speaking about the health impacts of traffic-related air pollution. And I will be talking about cardiovascular disease within the multi-ethnic study of atherosclerosis and air pollution, and then Aaron will talk about the impacts of air pollution on the brain in the context of the cardiovascular health study. And we will be talking about work that is less likely to be able to take home and do tomorrow. And a lot of the things we're going to talk about may have some of the pitfalls that could make, you know, some of our previous speakers mad, because there's a lot of air pollution measurements that can't easily be duplicated in other places because they're so intensive. But hopefully the results from our study will be broadly applicable. So this is a picture of London from December of 1952, from the famous London smog event. And this event is widely regarded as one of the most important air pollution episodes in terms of its impact on public perception of air pollution and on government regulation. And the combination of millions of coal stoves, local factories, and a stagnant winter weather pattern resulted in a motionless layer of smoke and fumes that blanketed the city for 4 days. These photos are from midday. And what you see in this figure from Michelle Bell and Deborah Davis is time on the x-axis. SO2 concentration is represented by the circles, and weekly mortality is represented by the boxes. And you see this peak right around the time of this London smog event. And so there's a very clear relationship here, even going back to the 50s, between episodic air pollution exposure and mortality. So the London fog event provides this episodic example, but we also have newer research, in particular from Doug Dockery and Arden Pope, looking at longer-term citywide exposures and health across cities. So the figure on the left is from the Harvard Six City Study, and what you see on the y-axis is the rate ratio for risk of death, and the x-axis is annual average fine particulate matter in six different cities. And it's kind of a strikingly linear relationship that you see here, where the highest rate ratio risk of death is from the most polluted city, which is Steubenville, Ohio, and the lowest come from Topeka and from the city that starts with P. And so on the other side here, the right-hand figure, it's from Arden Pope's group. This is from the American Cancer Society study, and it's kind of showing the same thing. Here, they specifically look at mortality by different causes, and what you see is a clear increase in both cardiopulmonary and lung cancer mortality with increasing particulate matter, but all other cause mortality remains flat. So from these and other studies, we know that air pollution is associated with adverse cardiovascular events. And the acute triggering of cardiovascular events like heart attack is pretty clearly observed. We know less about the long-term effects of air pollution on subclinical cardiovascular disease. So this is, you know, more about effects that wouldn't bring you into your doctor necessarily, thickening of the arteries, calcification. And we also know a little less about, or we've seen fewer studies that look at air pollution at the individual level rather than, say, the citywide level. So in 2004, the EPA made a significant investment in addressing some of these questions in the form of the multi-ethnic study of atherosclerosis and air pollution, which is what I'm going to talk about. So the first goal of MESA-AIR is to prospectively examine the relation between an individual assessment of long-term air pollution exposures and the progression of subclinical cardiovascular disease over 10 years. So we're also looking at cardiovascular events, but our primary focus is the subclinical one. So MESA-AIR is built on the framework of a National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute study called MESA. So we're actually a large ancillary study. And the MESA study recruited about 7,000 people from across the U.S. Between 2000 and 2002. And this cohort was free of clinical cardiovascular disease at baseline. It was basically balanced by gender, and it's obviously a multi-ethnic cohort. They were interested in the development of cardiovascular disease, so it's an older cohort where that's more likely to occur. And MESA-AIR is kind of piggybacking on this study and adding air pollution exposure estimates to this already existing cohort. So everybody in MESA undergoes these tests that we might not take home and do at home in our communities right away. But at the baseline exam, every person in the study got CT scans where we measured their coronary artery calcium and carotid ultrasounds. So on the left is the CT scan image, on the right is the ultrasound image. So readers draw those purple lines, they measure the difference between, or the distance between those lines, and that is also a measure of atherosclerosis. And in Mesa Air, we're bringing back 3,600 of these people during the fifth clinic exam, which is happening right now, to get repeat measures of all of these things. And we're looking not just at the absolute levels of these, but the difference over time, so whether air pollution exposure predicts progression of atherosclerosis. So we have, in addition to some sophisticated outcome measurements, we also have a pretty sophisticated exposure model. And I'll try to quickly walk us through this figure. Most studies in the past have looked at outdoor concentrations, and we're going to take that a step further and also look at predicted indoor concentrations. So if you start with sort of that first oval on the left, predicted outdoor concentrations at homes, we're using a spatiotemporal model to predict for every single participant what their air pollution concentration is, and we're combining both the measurements that the EPA collects as well as over 7,000 two-week samples outdoors in people's homes and in their communities, and combining that with geographic data to come up with these predictions. At the same time, we also have paired indoor and outdoor samples from about 800 participants' homes, and we're looking at the infiltration efficiency based on factors like home age, heating type, how often they report opening their windows, air conditioning use, and we have that information on everybody in the cohort. So using those 800 samples, we can actually predict the infiltration efficiency into every single home. On top of that, we also have people's reported patterns of behavior. So how much time they say they spend indoors, how much time they say they spend outdoors, and we're going to weight their indoor and outdoor concentrations by their individual behavior to come up with an individual exposure prediction. We also have personal monitors that over 100 people wore for 4 weeks, so we can compare our predictions with actual monitoring. This here is a map of our predicted outdoor concentrations of oxides of nitrogen. This is LA, one of our six cities. At this point, it's not to the level of indoor predictions, but NOx is a really important traffic-related air pollutant, and since the session is more about traffic, I'm focusing on that. So you can clearly see here the influence of the roadway on exposure. And every little black dot in that picture, they're kind of hard to see because they're so small. Every single one of them is one of our participants' homes, and this is they're jittered, so you can't tell exactly who they are. But this is just one of our cities. And the purple lines are places where we measure, or sort of little clusters of stars are places that we measured around roadways. The red pentagons are places where we measured continually for 5 years. So there's really a lot of data behind this. I'm going to go ahead and skip through this slide. And so we are in the middle of the study still. As I said, we're just now acquiring the CTs and ultrasounds from the follow-up exam, so I'm not presenting a lot of results here. But just to give an example of some of the things that we're finding early, another test that these participants are getting are MRIs over time. And so we're looking at left ventricular mass, which is an outcome, you know, associated with air pollution. And here what we find is that living within 50 meters of a major roadway is associated with increased left ventricular mass over time. So not just absolute, but increased mass over time. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Aaron.
So as Cindy discussed, the relationship between air pollution and cardiovascular disease is becoming more and more well established, although the precise mechanisms by which that explain these associations aren't entirely clear. It's plausible and maybe even likely that the brain is also sensitive to these general pathways. From a public health perspective, the quality of life and economic costs for patients with dementia and their caregivers are enormous and growing. It's estimated that 13% of older adults have Alzheimer's disease, and numbers are expected to grow, are projected to grow by 2050. And so it's really difficult to overstate the importance of studying risk factors for Alzheimer's disease in dementia, particularly those that are potentially modifiable, including environmental factors. And so we know that vascular disease is often present in cognitive decline and dementia cases at autopsy. And so it's possible that neurodegeneration occurs downstream of vascular disease, but there are also other potential pathways by which we might observe these effects, including a systemic inflammatory or oxidative stress response following inhalation of particles into the lung, or actual direct translocation of ultrafine particles from the lungs to the brain, or directly through the nose to the brain via the olfactory nerves. And in animal studies have shown a whole host of adverse consequences for the brain following each of these different pathways. Relative to what's been done looking at air pollution effects on cardiovascular disease, looking at the effects on the brain is still a relatively novel research direction. In some of the earliest work, Lillian Calderon-Garza-Duenas and colleagues observed increased beta amyloid deposition and markers of inflammation in the autopsy brains of humans and dogs living in a heavily polluted city compared to those living in a less polluted city. And also she saw elevated risk of cognitive deficits, or some cognitive deficits, and brain MRI detected white matter lesions in children residing in Mexico City compared to a less polluted city. So these findings, I think, are interesting and even provocative, but city-specific factors cannot be ruled out as explaining these associations. In the past several years, the epidemiologic evidence supporting a relationship between air pollution exposure and cognition has, a number of studies have been published, and they've authors have looked at various pollutants and relationship to various measures of cognitive performance and have seen significant associations in men and women and in all age groups. So at the University of Washington, we are looking at this question in the context of the cardiovascular health study. And to be eligible for CHS, participants had to be 65 years of age, expect to live in the same region over the next 3 years, and be able to answer questions at baseline and not be institutionalized. And participants were recruited during two phases at four field centers in the country, Sacramento, California, Pittsburgh, PA, Washington County, Maryland, and Forsyth County, North Carolina. So the CHS is a really nice population to look at this question. Over half the cohort had cranial MRIs performed at least one occasion during this study, and among other things, brain infarcts and white matter grade were assessed, and both of these outcomes are associated with physical impairment, cognitive impairment, motor decline. In addition, dementia, prevalent and incident dementia were both evaluated on over half of the members of the cohort, and all cohort members came in for annual exams in which two measures of cognitive performance were assessed. And in addition, we can also look at gene-environment interactions in this population through investigator-initiated genotyping studies, as well as initiatives, genome-wide association studies. Extensive genotyping has already been completed in the CHS population. So here I just wanted to show some early preliminary results from our analyses. Some air pollution exposure assessment has already been completed in CHS as part of an ancillary study headed up by Helen Margolis at UC Davis. And using these exposure estimates, I calculated the mean exposure of participants in the year 1992, so prior to MRI, average PM10 exposure for participants in three of the four study communities. And so there were 120 participants who at first MRI had a small infarct, so this was defined as an infarct less than 3 millimeters in diameter, and 396 had what was considered a large infarct greater than or equal to 3 millimeters in diameter. And in our preliminary analyses, it looks like the people who are exposed to 10 micrograms per cubic meter higher PM10 have 1.5 times greater odds of having a prevalent infarct of any size at this first exam. And so additional analyses we're going to do more detailed analyses of these MRI findings as well as the findings looking at cognitive performance and dementia incidence. And we are also planning to take advantage of the exposure assessment expertise in Mesa Air to develop some more refined estimates of exposure to air pollutants for this population, which was followed up in the 1990s. And with that, Cindy and I would both like to thank our funding supporters, EPA, EHS, and NHLBI, as well as the major contributors to each of these projects.
Thank you.